Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back from the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Got two Pauls on with us, Paul Martin and Paul Kangas. Paul Martin is in D.C. Paul, are you there with us?
Yes, thanks for having me, Harvey.
Oh, thank you. And Paul Kangas, you're in San Francisco. You doing okay out there? Okay, we'll get him. Paul Martin, today is the lead up, of course, to the inauguration and of Donald Trump and the profound change in American history, certainly as profound a change as any, as we've confronted with the coming of a new president. You are with one of the most important of the peace groups in this country, and your issues are going to be front and center with the Trump presidency. Tell us, Paul, about your group and what you hope to, what you're looking for with Donald Trump as he comes in.
Well, certainly some of your older listeners will know us better as SANE. We were started now 60 years ago as a Committee for a SANE Nuclear Policy, fighting back on the idea of building so many nuclear weapons. And in the 80s, we merged with the freeze movement, which was talking about freezing the number of nuclear weapons. And after this kind of success of working with Russia and signing various agreements, you know, we've now moved from 120,000 nuclear weapons in the world to about 14,000, changed our name to Peace Action, and now work on more issues than just nuclear weapons. But we're still working to get rid of the last 14,000. And at the same time, working to stop wars in the Middle East and to reduce the Pentagon budget, which takes up some over 50% of our discretionary spending.
Well, that's a pretty that's a very good rundown. I remember SANE very well. I remember a TV entertainer named Steve Allen, who was very involved with SANE. I never met him, and there were major demonstrations. I believe Dr. Benjamin Spock was part of SANE. And I did have the honor of getting arrested with him at the Pentagon in 1980 as part of the general campaign to keep us from blowing up the world. I certainly remember the nuclear freeze movement, and it's good to see you are still going. How many folks work for your organization now?
Well, it just depends on how you count. You know, we have a good 15 or 20 people at the national office. That's actually split between our office in Oakland and our office in D.C. But we have about 100 chapters and affiliates, and they all volunteers or paid staff, too. And they're separate organizations, but they're part of the Peace Action family.
Beautiful. And what is your job with the organization?
So I am the Senior Director for Policy and Political Affairs, which is a fancy title. That means basically I am translating what's going on here in Congress with our grassroots folks, while at the same time using our grassroots pressure to make Congress and the administration work better on these issues.
And what is your website, just for so people can get you identified up front?
Sure. Easiest is www.peace-action.org. Peace-action.org.
All right. Now, let's get down to it, Paul. We have a new president coming in. Quite a few things were said in the campaign. He is in many ways, probably more of an unknown on foreign policy and on nuclear issues than anybody who's come into the White House in a long, long time. Really, there's no way I can see to make sense of what we can expect from Donald Trump. What are you thinking? What is your organization thinking about the coming of Donald Trump?
Well, we've certainly, you know, we typically do our kind of strategizing for the year starting, let's say, October. And we had already started actually before the election. So we certainly thought there would be a different outcome, like a lot of the pollsters and smart people thought as well. So we're changing our strategy and tactics. Now, we've experienced the Trump, we've experienced the Bush administration, that is George W. So we know what it's like to need to play defense. You know, we did help organize the, you know, I think it was 17 million people across the world, you know, who protested the run-up to the Iraq war. We think we were pretty instrumental in making sure that the administration didn't have military action in Iran, which was mostly the push by the vice president's office, Cheney. So we kind of know how that works, and so we've kind of changed into that mode. It's a different type of organizing, and so that's what we're preparing for. We've already started working, you know, against the nominations, especially Exxon CEO Tillerson. And really, some of it is going to be a little bit wait and see, right? Because Trump has said all kinds of things, and we need to see what his actions are rather than his words. So you mentioned nuclear weapons. He said, you know, on the one hand, they're bad. We shouldn't have so many. On the other hand, we should modernize them and, you know, beat Russia in another arms race. And then on Sunday, he said he would be willing to do some sort of a transactional. We'll lift sanctions if Russia does some sort of arms control agreement. And then, you know, earlier this week, Russia said, well, that's not really how it works. We either talk arms and we talk about other things separate. So we're not sure what he's going to do about nuclear weapons. He's also talked about being, you know, let's not pay NATO so much. And do we really need to be spending so much money on NATO, which is something we would agree on. But is that really something he's going to do? And then lastly, he's talked about supposedly being against the Iraq war, but I think if you look at the history, he was actually for it, and being against military intervention if you don't really need it. So there's a lot of contradictions, which is kind of, you know, the definition of Trump, right? So we'll need to see what actions he's taking, and, you know, who gets confirmed for us to exactly know how we're going to react, but we're already preparing to, you know, stop any kind of craziness that he might try to do.
Well, let's start at the top here or at the bottom. Barack Obama was talking about $1 trillion for modernizing, whatever the hell that means, our nuclear arsenal. I have not, and I assume we had to take that very seriously. And my understanding also is that as he was leaving the White House, Obama approved a massive amount of money for a Star Wars defense system. Am I wrong about those two things?
But no, you're right about both of them. So unfortunately, Obama, I think, got hoodwinked by the Republicans when he put together his new START agreement with Russia, which is a great agreement. It did cut a lot of things by like a third and, you know, brought us down now to some 1,500 strategic warheads and moving in the right direction. So it was a good agreement with Russia. But what he needed to do to get some of the Republicans' votes is to agree that we would keep our nuclear weapons so-called safe and secure, and that we would replace our aging triad, the delivery systems, the missiles, the submarines, and the bombers. And I don't think he really realized how expensive that is. And it is going to be about $1 trillion over 30 years. And even many Republicans know we really can't afford that. So something has to go. But Trump has said he wants to also make sure our weapons are modernized. And he claims that Russia is ahead of us on this front, but you know, we spend about 10 times more on nuclear weapons than Russia does, so that's not really the case. But I think he'll, you know, the first budget around might stay about the same, but I don't think he's really going to try to spend more money on nuclear weapons than we already do. And at some point, someone's going to say we can't afford $1 trillion over 30 years.
By the way, we're joined by Paul Kangas. And Paul, we're going to be talking with Paul Martin here about weapons and that whole program with the coming of Donald Trump. In a certain way, I got to admit, it's kind of refreshing not knowing what Trump is going to do. I mean, you know, we're assuming the worst, but the worst, as far as I could tell, was Hillary Clinton. She wasn't talking about arms reduction at all, as far as I can tell. And so then here's the question for you, Paul Martin. These nuclear weapons, who are they supposed to be protecting us from? If Trump and Clinton, Putin are such good buddies, what do we need the nuclear arsenal for? I mean, are we going to be attacked by Denmark or Bhutan? I mean, who's this all about?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I mean, obviously, we were found on the fact that, you know, nuclear weapons are, you know, anathema to humanity, and we should just get rid of them. We saw what damage they did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and those weapons are, you know, a tenth to 100 times smaller than the modern nuclear weapons that we have now. And current studies say that even a small nuclear exchange between, let's say, India and Pakistan, you know, could bring us to the so-called nuclear winter, in which, you know, significant changes in atmosphere could happen because of so much dust blocking sunlight and other factors. So these weapons, you just really cannot be used. They're just, you cannot imagine the damage that would happen. So, of course, we're for getting rid of them all, but some people still think that they provide some sort of a deterrent from, you know, either China or, you know, the several other or now really North Korea, who may be able to have a missile soon enough that might be able to reach part of the United States, that somehow these nuclear weapons are keeping them from doing that, despite the fact that we have conventional forces, even without nuclear weapons, to wipe almost any country off the map if we really needed to do so. Yeah, I don't know why we need nuclear weapons. And even people in the Pentagon say that we could probably get down to about 300, and that would still be a credible deterrent. And right now we have, you know, several thousand in strategic deployment and another 4,000 or 5,000 in reserve, just more weapons than we really know what to do with, at a cost of hundreds of billions of dollars a year, when, you know, we can't afford to deal with things like jobs creation and education and fixing transportation.
Well, are we using them to deter China? If it's not Russia that we're deterring, and if Trump and Putin are such good friends, then what about, do the Chinese have a nuclear threat to us? I've never seen much discussion about the idea that our nuclear arsenal is to protect us from the Chinese. Is that any part of the dialogue here?
No, of course that's what people think, that it's part of the deterrence from China, you know, launching nuclear weapons at us. Our understanding, our best intelligence about China, who has maybe a few hundred nuclear warheads, much smaller arsenal than ours, is that they might not even have the warheads on the missiles, that they've removed warheads from the missiles as a safety feature. So it would really take a lot of thought and whatever to decide to launch. And again, does it really make sense that they're really going to launch on the U.S. when, you know, one, it would be perhaps nuclear retaliation, and two, even launching on the U.S., our conventional forces could do significant damage to China. It doesn't make sense to me and to most Americans who say we should get rid of nuclear weapons, but it's certainly the strategic people at the Pentagon who think that they're worth keeping. And I wouldn't be surprised that it has something to do with the corporations who are making money off of these things.
Well, who are they? Who are the corporations that are making money on these
things? As usual, the Pentagon is wise of spreading it wide and spreading it to various states. So you certainly have Lockheed Martin and others who are benefiting, but there are also just a lot of, you know, missile silos in North Dakota and submarines in Maine, and there's various other states that benefit from the nuclear weapons program. You know, right there in California, you got Los Alamos, you know, and places in New Mexico, Pantex down in Texas. So again, they're very wise. They spread this out so that there's many members of Congress who would be affected by something. And so that's why there's actual, like, a missile caucus in the Congress. And there's, these caucuses that, you know, want to keep things the way they are, because that's the, you know, Pentagon pork rolling into the trough.
Yeah, we're talking with Paul Martin, an expert on nuclear weaponry. And, of course, the New York Times ran what I would have to term a preemptive strike a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you guys had anything to do with this, about speculating on really zero evidence. But, you know, it was an interesting piece on whether or not Trump was going to resume nuclear testing. And now, as you know, and as many of my listeners know, nuclear testing underground stopped in 1992, I believe, was the last of the nuclear weapons tests. And, of course, atmospheric testing, at least the Soviets and the Americans, stopped in 1963 with the Test Ban Treaty signed by John Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev. Have you seen any evidence that Trump is inclined to start nuclear testing?
I don't think so. I think it'd be difficult, one, to find a place that they'd want to do it. And there's a lot of people in Nevada who've learned their lesson about nuclear testing. There's a many downwinders, issues around cancer, and I think they have been they're done with that. Even underground nuclear tests can have major effects to aquifers, seismic activity, and other things. So I think it'd be very difficult. And one of the reasons why we kind of stopped, to be honest, is because we had the technology to be able to do a lot of the modeling and stuff without actually doing the test. And there's also something called subcritical tests. I'm not sure when the last time we did those, where you test some of the stuff without the actual full nuclear fission reaction. So I don't see Trump being able to do that. But, he says crazy things, so hopefully he doesn't do crazy things like doing something like that. But, there will be responses, obviously, to North Korea. We expect to see probably more nuclear tests coming from North Korea over the next couple of years. It is the only country who's doing nuclear tests currently. So there'll be a big focus on North Korea, but I don't think that we will start nuclear testing again.
Well, let's hope you're right. And, of course, your organization, which is in the forefront of fighting these things, can have a lot to do with it. Why can't we just send Dennis Rodman to North Korea and get that taken care of?
Yeah, why not? So there needs to be a dialogue. And, in fact, unfortunately, the Obama administration has not been willing to have bilateral discussions with North Korea. You know, there were six-party talks going on, and those kind of stopped. And that's the only way, that was the kind of the way that the Obama administration said they'd want to move forward, is only if we went forward with six-party talks. But, bilateral talks are important, and, we have to talk to our worst enemies. That's the only way that these things get solved. There's not going to be a military solution with North Korea. So I certainly hope that the Trump administration thinks about some bilateral discussions, even if they are, what we call two-track discussions, where they're not public and, you're kind of doing it underground. Those are the only ways you're going to come up with some sort of a deal to stop the craziness of, their nuclear weapons program. And they have their own needs, and we can certainly do sanctions and whatever we need to do to that kind of crazy regime over there in North Korea. But it's not going to, I can't see military might working, right? We've been threatening them for years, and that certainly hasn't helped. So we need to figure out a way to move forward to North Korea to make all of us safer and get rid of their nuclear weapons as well.
Yeah, well, the guy, the kid there in charge of North Korea seems to be a basketball nut. I bet if we sent him over the Cavs and the Warriors for a demonstration game, that would end the whole thing, right? One quick question I wanted to ask you about is Japan. Trump did make rumblings about wanting Japan, unless I misunderstood, and you probably know better than me. Did Trump say more or less that he wanted Japan to now have nuclear weapons?
Yeah, there was a quote from him during the campaign about, something about, that more nuclear weapons in the world would be a good thing. And then it wasn't very long that he tried to correct himself and said that's not quite what he meant. So, again, it was the Trump dualism. I don't know what he means by what he says. I have to wait to see what he does. So, You know, Japan signed agreements after World War II, you know, not even having any kind of an army or something that would be threatening. They could only have a self-defense army. And, of course, the anti-nuclear weapons there is very strong. I just can't imagine even the most conservative government getting away with trying to build nuclear weapons in Japan. I mean, and you know, as you're the expert on nuclear power, even that is starting to decline there after the after their disaster in Fukushima. So, you know, Trump can say that. I don't think that's it's a political possibility in Japan.
Well, we will segue. I know you have to leave soon. Then we will segue to Paul Kangas, who's on the line. And who's been in Japan recently, but I have to say that in line with what you just said, that since Fukushima, the current prime minister of Japan, who's really, I mean, I will use the term fascist, he is very, very right-wing, really wants to reopen the nuclear plants in Japan, and he's been unable to do that. So I suppose if they want, he wants to take the step to nuclear weapons, he'd have an even bigger problem on his hands. Paul Martin, I know you have to go soon. Tell us exactly, as much as you can, please, now. I know you gave us a little heads up at the beginning. What is your organization going to be working on now with Trump coming in, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly we're going to focus on our issues, which is nuclear weapons. So some of that is
really your goal to get budget. Rid of, is your goal, I'm sorry to interrupt, is your goal to entirely rid the world of nuclear weapons? Is that in your charter?
That is certainly our goal. That is certainly our goal. And, you know, we realize, you know, it may take some time, but that is what we're pushing for. And there's a number of, you know, ways that we're moving forward with that. You know, there's stuff happening on the international front. Just briefly, you know, the United Nations is actually going to have a convention this year where they're going to debate and actually might pass some sort of a convention against nuclear weapons. Now, whether or not the nuclear weapons states are going to participate or agree or whatever, you know, hundreds of other countries are against nuclear weapons and want to see no nuclear weapons in the world, and they're using the UN to put pressure on the several nuclear weapons states. So that's happening on the international front, and nationally we're focused on the budget, this, as you mentioned, the $1 trillion over 30 years, and there are certainly parts of that we can start whittling away from. One is something called a long-range standoff missile. They want to build a new nuclear-tipped cruise missile. That would be very destabilizing. You certainly wouldn't want to send a cruise missile somewhere and some country think that that's a nuclear weapon, and so they respond with a nuclear weapon, even if it didn't have a nuclear tip on it. This is a big waste of money, so we're working on cutting that. And then just in general, do we really need, if we're moving down to a world without nuclear weapons and we continue to move to have less and less, why do we need to replace our whole submarine fleet, our whole bomber fleet, and our whole missile fleet? We don't need to do that. So there are certainly cuts that can be done there, and we'll be working on that. That's on the nuclear weapons front. Tangentially, the Iran agreement, which Trump has said he wants to tear up. I don't think he will. But we will make sure we want to keep that agreement intact. That has made the world safer. Iran was, you know, a few months away if they chose to get a nuclear weapon. Now they're more than a year away, and they're now monitored and have inspections regime, the most comprehensive ever. This has made us safer. The Iran agreement is working, so we're going to make sure that that continues. And then on the Pentagon budget, just writ large, people know it's approaching some over $1 trillion. You don't believe the numbers the government tell you, because they don't talk about that 60% of the Department of Energy's budget is nuclear weapons. They don't talk about, you know, the monies that we have to deal with, you know, to help veterans after wars, and they don't talk about the payment of monies on the debt from borrowing all this money to have wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So the cost is very high, and this is at the expense of other things that people want. And we will continue to work on cutting the Pentagon budget this year. Those will be our major areas of focus. And we also work on elections, so we'll be looking at, you know, the midterm elections and getting people in Congress who support these ideas.
Well, in terms of your elections work, first of all, I applaud and embrace your work on the peace movement and getting rid of our arsenal and cutting the costs. Fantastic and critically important work, and you guys are in the vanguard. I hope you will join us. As you may know, I've been working on election protection with my co-author Bob Fatakis and others like Bev Harris and Greg Pallas on reforming our election system. And we are calling for universal automatic voter registration with registration forms available at bureaus of motor vehicles and in schools and elsewhere so that anybody who's a citizen can be automatically registered to vote. We want those voter rolls handled transparently. They should be on paper, but they should also be available for inspection through the Internet. We want a four-day holiday, national holiday for voting, so that people don't have to leave work. That would be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, so it doesn't require a constitutional amendment. And, of course, we want universal hand-counted paper ballots, where there are no voting machines, no electronic voting machines at all, and automatic recounts in terms of once the elections are done, so that we don't have to go through what Jill Stein did this year and spend $7 million and really get nowhere. So in terms of your voter work, I hope you will adopt something like that platform. We also, of course, oppose all forms of gerrymandering, and we want the Electoral College abolished along with the Citizen United decision reversed. That's a fairly short but massive agenda, and we look forward to working with you on that. Our book on that, the book I co-wrote with Bob Fatakis, is currently the one we have out, is the Strip and Flip Selection of 2016, and it's going to be upgraded to the Strip and Flip Disaster of America's Stolen Elections. So I look forward to working with you on all of that, Paul. Martin, what is it? Give us again the name of your organization and the website.
Sure. Peace Action, www.peace-action.org. Peace-action.org. And there people can sign up. We do have like a once-a-week e-alert list to keep people apprised of these and show them how they can take action to work on that. They can find that there. And I appreciate your election work. I'm not an expert on that stuff, but I'm sure you can sign us up as we support probably 90% of what you just said.
Okay, well, let me give you my email if you'll email me. So I actually don't have your personal email. Mine is solartopia@gmail.com. Solartopia@gmail.com, and I will email you the link to this show, which you can spread around. And thank you for your great work on peace. And I am actually, I have to say, you know, Trump is a terrifying prospect for all of us. But I was not happy with what Obama did in terms of refunding Star Wars and putting out this idea of, you know, he comes into office and says he's going to get rid of all nuclear weapons, and then, you know, puts out a $1 trillion budget to upgrade the arsenal. That was not great. So, Paul Martin, I look forward to working with you in the future, and keep up your great work. We'll talk again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Harvey. Much appreciated.
All right, Paul. Take care. Paul Kangas, you're with us.
Hey, Paul. Harvey, nice to Paul Martin. Let me recommend a movie. The movie is starring Robert De Niro is called Wag the Dog. If you want to understand why Obama gave that $1 trillion away, it's the whole thing is around that movie Wag the Dog. I'm a veteran of World War III. I was part of the Navy invasion of Cuba at the Bay of Pigs, and so I expected to die in 1962 when they were pushing us into the front lines. But I didn't. So the way we can shut down all nukes is the way Germany's doing it. And also the way California just voted is now got a bill called Senate Bill 71 before the California legislature, which would require all new building construction in California to be solar power. And we already have a California PUC ruling that requires utilities, not the government, the utilities in California to pay solar homeowners 56 cents a kilowatt hour for surplus solar fed onto the grid. So if you build like a 100-panel solar-powered carport, which I'm building, you can make about $1,000 a month income from solar energy. And this is how Germany is shutting down all of its nukes. Harvey, as you probably know, Germany is shutting down the last nuke in May of 2022. And the way they did it is by building 100,000 of these 100-panel solar-powered houses. And so they, over there in Germany, the owners of the house each make about $2,000 a month income from solar. And they've created the solar economy, which is what you predicted in your book, Solartopia. So it was well on the way.
Let's do one thing here, Paul. I'm talking to Paul Kangas now. Paul Martin was just on with us from the group Peace Action. Paul Kangas is a solar activist in California, been on our show before. And there's a few developments I want to discuss with you. First of all, though, you have recently been in Asia. Did you have any encounters with nuclear weapons policy in either China or Japan or Russia that you might want to share with us?
Sure. Yeah, it was great. I traveled across Russia and Mongolia and China on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. And on this railroad, you sit in these four-person compartments. So you get to have great discussions with Russians and Mongolians and Chinese in this private setting where my girlfriend and I were talking to these people. Several hundred of them we met. And they know what's going on in Russia. In fact, as we were on the train, you could see atomic energy plants right there. I took pictures of them, videos of them, and I put the videos up on my YouTube site, which is my name, Paul 8, the figure 8, the number 8, Kangas, K-A-N-G-A-S. And you can see these videos I made in Russia, in Mongolia, and China of atomic energy plants along the railroad. And a limited amount of solar, but the nice thing about it was the trains they have built across Russia and China are electric powered. And that means they're going to be able to soon link the windmills. I mean, I was shocked at the number of giant 100-meter-high windmills I saw in northern China. There were forests of them. As far as the eye could see, these giant 100-meter-high windmills. I mean, these things are huge. And my main goal when I went there last July was to visit all the solar plants I could find. And I ended up seeing the atomic energy plants just by accident because they were there, even in Mongolia. So the way we in the United States can lead by example is to follow the German example and move to shut down Diablo Canyon here in California and every atomic energy plant in Ohio, across the United States, wherever there's an atomic energy plant. If we build, I mean, this sounds utopian when I tell people this, but it's not that hard. It costs $20,000 to build a 100-panel solar-powered carport. And if enough people, enough activists, build just one of these things in their town, other people will look at it and say, oh my God, they're making $1,000 a month off of solar, so why can't I do the same thing? And so we will lead by example, and we will be able to shut down all the nukes in this country the same way Germany is shutting down all their nukes. And China, in their last five-year plan that just was reported in the press, I believe yesterday, the New York Times reported on this, China has decided to shut down all their coal-fired power plants. They're not going to build any more because in December and January, it's when the pollution is worst. When I was in China in July, the air was perfectly clean. You could I took videos along streets in Beijing where you could see for 20 blocks along the street, and there's no air pollution. It's clear. It's clean. But it's the winter time due to the weather, the inversion layer, that the coal dust, smoke, envelops Beijing. And it's a terrible crisis right now in Beijing from this coal fire. And so the people are threatening the government about this coal problem. And China has just built more solar panels than all the countries in the world. And so My girlfriend and I are installing 20 solar panels on our roof next month, made in China. We're buying Chinese solar panels because we want to have global business ties. And she's Chinese, and I'm very much in favor of trading with China. So that's what we can do to shut down nukes. And it's
well,
so
what,
important
what do you know
do
about China has had, to my knowledge, China has had extensive plans to build new nuclear power plants in China, as many as 36. Now, I did see this article, obviously, in the Times. It didn't say anything about their plans on nuclear power. Does anybody really know what the Chinese are planning on nuclear power?
Yes, because I read a newspaper called China Daily every day. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend, who's Chinese, makes a joke about it that I read the Chinese press more than any Chinese person she knows. So what their five-year plan says is this, that coal is the most danger to the Chinese air. And so China is making the same argument that James, what's his name, the famous American scientist, James from NASA.
Hansen.
James Hansen. Yeah, I spoke for him one time at an American Association for the Advancement of Science conference in San Francisco. I'm a dead ringer for James Hansen. So I go to the conference. He's supposed to be speaking, but he'd been banned from speaking. So I just wandered up on the stage, turned on the microphone, started speaking, and nobody knew it was not him. But, you know,
that's great.
Yeah,
I like that.
It was great. Nobody knew I was not him until somebody asked me my name about half an hour after I'd been speaking.
But he has now become an advocate for nuclear power, so we have to be careful of him.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying is China has the same position. They say coal is the most danger to China. Next is oil, which they don't have. Next is gas, which they have some of, and they're buying gas and oil from Russia. There's a huge pipeline runs from Russia across the border into China, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to go to Russia and China and walk along the border and see this huge trade going on. China and Russia are like twin brothers at this point in history. China buys all of its jet planes and bombers from Russia. They buy their military equipment, the guns that their troops have. I took pictures of their troops. They're all carrying Russian-made Kalashnikovs made in Russia. So these two twin brothers. Anyhow, the point being that China has decided that atomic energy is the least dangerous now. They're wrong, but and I told people in China I met, I was at a party where a member of the Chinese Red Army, a general from the Chinese Red Army, listened to me talk, and then he proposed a toast to me that I was a breath of fresh air in China. And here he is. He's a member of the Chinese Red Army. He's a general. And so I pointed out, you know, that China is making a mistake, depending on atomic energy, that they have to go 100% towards solar. And they're pushing as hard as they can to do it. I mean, there are more solar panels installed on more roofs in China than there is in the whole rest of the world. But China's a big country, and most of these panels are actually thermal panels. They have hot water panels on millions of buildings across China. You will see them everywhere on apartment buildings. And they have, they've also adding a lot of solar panels, but they're doing it wrong on that point too, because they're building giant solar farms in China. I mean, giant solar farms, bigger than anything we have here. They're centralizing the energy to help the government avoid air pollution. But I'm in favor of instead that they encourage homeowners in China and in the United States to do like Germany's doing, of that where the lion's share of the income from solar goes to the solar homeowners, not corporations. Of course, in China, the corporations are state-owned, so it's. But in the United States, most of the solar is built by corporations like Shell Oil. Here in California, they have these giant solar farms, and if you look into who owns these things, it's Shell Oil. So the main China's making a mistake on those two levels, I think, and that we need to lead by example here in this country and follow the German model rather than the Chinese model of
building. Well, tell us about the German model.
Well, the German model, this guy Hermann Scheer, I highly recommend people read the book he wrote called The Solar Economy. Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R. He had built a 100-panel solar-powered house in the Black Forest of Germany in 1980. Then when Chernobyl melted down, I was there when this happened. Everybody was running around screaming because the radiation was falling on Germany. From the Ukraine, it was falling mainly on Germany. And a lot of people in Germany died from the radiation. And a lot of kids got thyroid cancer from it and still are suffering. But Scheer was going around from campus to campus saying, look, here's what we have to do. I have built a 100-panel solar-powered house. And people would go out there and look at it, and he was generating so much energy from his house that not only was he making money from it, but he was supplying his neighbors with energy. So he ran a campaign to run for office, to run for the parliament, based on his 100-panel solar-powered house. And he got elected. And now his daughter is a member of the German parliament pushing for 100-panel solar-powered houses to give the lion's share of income from solar to the homeowners.
China has announced that they're going to extend $350 billion in the next 3 years on renewable energy, including a lot of it on wind. There was a big article in the Times also about how these huge wind farms that you may have seen, some of them, are underutilized. And a lot of them are sitting idle because they don't have nearby communities to feed wind power into. This is bad.
No, that's not true. I was there. I stood there and looked at them. They're not idle. It was fantastic. I made a video of it, and you can see it on my YouTube site, Paul 8 Kangas, of these vast forests of windmills. And what they're doing is they're feeding local farms. They're feeding the local grid. And it's decentralized. Now, the New York Times probably does not like the fact that China is decentralizing this energy. And it's not being centralized the way the American corporations want. So they're probably falsely critical of China for doing what should be done. And I don't think they're underutilized, but I don't know. I was a passenger on a train. I was going through, I was just talking to people that were there on the trains, and they were pointing out these windmills everywhere and solar panels everywhere. And I talked to maybe 100 people in China, 50 or 60 in Mongolia, and another 100 people, maybe 200 people in Russia, because I had a lot more access to people in Russia. And most of them I talked to spoke English fairly well, because I discovered that young people in Russia speak English. So if you want to find somebody when you're walking through the Moscow subway, which we did for 5 days, and you want to talk to somebody, just pick these young college students who are wearing suits and a white shirt. They mainly spoke English. And my girlfriend was shocked that I found so many people that could speak English.
What did you find out about Russian energy policy? Are the Russians pushing ahead with nuclear power plants? Is there any sign that the Russians are interested in going solar?
Yes and no. Because they have electrified the Trans-Siberian Railroad, they need the electricity. So you can see atomic energy plants along the railroad powering the trains. But at the same time, they've built the largest solar-powered farm in the world in a Mongolian, it's a Muslim province in southern Russia. I've located it, and the flag is very funny. The flag is a blue flag with a sun rising on it and a woman riding a horse across the sun. That's the flag of that that province. And they built it. You can Google giant solar farm in Russia, and it'll take you right to the story about they built this huge, huge solar farm, which I disagree with, but that's what they're doing. So they are pushing as fast as they can. Russia is not going as fast and as far as China. And I think they're buying their solar panels from China because that province where they're doing the solar farm is right on the border with China. It's right in
Tell us now about the new policy in California. Your friend Scott Wiener, a state senator, has pushed through a bill. Tell us about that. And you mentioned a 59 cent a kilowatt hour payback. Is that in place in California now?
Yes, yes, yes. Senate Bill 71 is something he proposed in the California legislature. And the day after he introduced it, there was a massive flood of news articles by the utilities and the oil companies in every newspaper in the state attacking it, saying that it would put people out of work, and which is the exact opposite of what it will do. I mean, this law would require all new houses built in San Francisco. Oh, by the way, it's the law now in San Francisco. Last year, Supervisor Scott Wiener passed the law in San Francisco. This year, he introduced it into the California legislature. And it's going to be the most important bill before the California legislature, and that's why the oil companies are attacking it every day now. It requires that all new construction in California have to be solar powered. I think it's only 20% solar. I would rather it had followed the model of Lancaster, California, which has a law requiring all new construction in Lancaster, California must be 100% solar powered. And I think it's mainly relating to houses. But the Senate Bill 71 applies to any building that is under 10 stories. So I guess 10 or under. And we have
does that mean the building has to get all of its electricity from solar panels installed on the building?
No. It means that I think it's 20%. I think the proposed legislation is 20%. But I'm sending letters to Senator Wiener, the good Wiener, saying that it should be at least 50% and even 100%. We could go 100% because, you know, if there's a big earthquake in California and we lose 5 or 10% of the buildings in California, this law would require all the new buildings to be solar powered, and we could copy what they already did in Lancaster, California, which requires 100% solar. There's no reason why a house cannot be built 100% solar power. It's just absolutely
easy. Well, let me ask you,
easy.
In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, this law, it says that if you build a home or an office building in Lancaster, California, a new one, you have to be able to get 100% of your electricity from the solar panels on that building?
Yes, yes, yes. And I'll tell you the name of the mayor. He's actually famous because he not only did that, he's a very wealthy criminal defense attorney named Rex Harris, P-A-R-R-I-S. You can Google him. And there's articles all about him all over the world because he now wanders around the world. He gets invitations from all over the world to come and speak about building 100% solar-powered buildings. And he also did this. He invited a company called Build Your Dreams, a huge bus company from China, to come to Lancaster, California, and build electric buses. And so now, between Lancaster, California, and Los Angeles, every day there's a bus goes every 2 hours between Lancaster, California, and Los Angeles. Electric buses that go, they make two trips back and forth on one charge. This is phenomenal what he's done. You can see it's Build Your Dreams is the bus company in Lancaster. And it's an important thing for people to realize. So See, Senate Bill 71 happens to link into another rule we have in California now, set up by the California POC, which requires that during peak hours of solar generation from, say, 10 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the utilities are required to pay the homeowners 56 cents a kilowatt hour. And in the evenings, if you store electricity in a battery, like, and you feed it onto the grid, then the rate goes down to something like 15 or 16 cents a kilowatt hour. So there's this range that when a maximum amount of energy is being used, the solar homeowner is making the maximum amount of money, which is reasonable, and it gives a lot of money to solar homeowners if they have enough panels to feed the grid between the maximum energy hours of, say, 10 a.m. in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. So those two laws in California make California and the state of Maine, by the way, the state of Maine has passed a similar law, the PUC in Maine, that requires the payment of 33 cents a kilowatt hour from the utilities to solar homeowners in Maine. So in California and in Maine, you have a similar situation, which creates an opportunity for homeowners to build 100-panel solar-powered carports or homes, and that way make money with the solar economy. This is a beautiful situation in California and Maine.
Wow, that's pretty encouraging. What is happening with wind power in California? Is it continuing to grow?
Well, wind power is, you know, we have a few windmills in these passes, and it's not as big a deal as solar. They're building windmills along the coast. I'm not as aware of it because there's not that much going on. But that's mainly corporate because, you know, it costs $3 million to build a windmill, three or four. But a 100-panel solar-powered carport, you can build for $20,000. Almost anybody who owns a home can afford to, if they have a farm or they live on an Indian reservation, almost anybody with $20,000 can build a 100-panel solar-powered carport and tap into the solar economy. It's a beautiful situation in California and Maine, but the wind, not so much here in California.
Okay. Paul, what do we think about Donald Trump coming in? What is going to happen with the solar industry with Donald Trump coming in? He's clearly not a fan of solar. He got very angry at a wind farm built off his golf course in Scotland. What are we expecting with the federal government in the United States?
Well, no matter who the president is, because of solar energy right now, no matter who the president is, I don't care if it's Angela Merkel, that we are in charge now. Those of us building solar-powered carports are in charge of the whole economy. And the corporations hate it. They fear it. They write articles against it every day. They've hired hundreds of lawyers to write terrible articles attacking solar. Like, for instance, when Angela Merkel came in to Germany, she was opposed to solar energy, just like Trump is. She was in favor of atomic energy, just like Trump is. But she was forced by the reality of the meltdown in Fukushima. There's videos you can see on YouTube of her watching the meltdown in Fukushima, and she, all of a sudden, she speaks up and she says, it's all over. It's all over. Atomic energy is dead. We must go to 100% solar. So it's a beautiful one-minute video of her freaking out over Fukushima. So
I'd like to see that. Where do you? That's an amazing thing. I'd love to see that.
Yes, yes.
How do you see that?
Google Angela Merkel watching the meltdown at Fukushima. So when Trump witnesses the earthquake in California, which is coming this year, we're expecting a 7.9 earthquake in 2017, which will topple Diablo Canyon, which sits 100 meters off the coast, 100 meters up in the air, and it's just waiting to fall into the Pacific Ocean in the best abalone water in the state and explode with a giant radioactive cloud of water.
We don't want to predict that, Paul. That's not something we want to have happen. Let me finish the joke. I don't want to hear that because I have a house in L.A. But the bottom line is that Trump is not going to understand the way Angela Merkel, who's a chemist and a brilliant woman, is not going to have different perceptions than Donald Trump. So
absolutely. But she got those perceptions from Fukushima.
Well, if Trump succeeds in repealing the federal incentives, the solar tax credit and other things, what's that going to do to the solar industry in California?
Well, he's going to try and do that, but he will be stopped by the reality of the unions building solar-powered houses. And all over the country now, there are people like Arizona is a terrible situation. One of the solar-richest states in the nation has a rule now that puts a tax on your solar panels if you dare to put solar panels on your roof. In Arizona, people are actually taking the solar panels off the roof to avoid the tax.
Paul, we gotta go. Thank you, Studio in New York. We'll continue this next week under the new Trump president. See you then. Thank you, Paul Kagan. Much appreciated.